Welcome to the Omni Gamers Club podcast, the podcast for games on all platforms, including the Ambernic RG406H. My name is Mark Uessa.
My name is Daniel Winter. I see you've updated your model number there, Mark.
That's right, a slightly larger model number. I'm slowly upgrading bit by bit. Actually, a bit too rapidly, but I'll talk about that a bit later. It's been a long time, Daniel. I haven't seen you in ages.
All of 2 weeks, yes. Although we did actually see each other in person yesterday. Perhaps exactly. A little more on that later. We've had some scheduling issues that we'll perhaps discuss a little bit later, and some illnesses. But for now, we're coming back with another playlist of everything we've missed over the last couple of weeks.
That's right. Bits and bobs, news and this and that, whatever's interesting us. And of course, the games that we've been playing. So, Daniel, you want to start us off with something that's interesting you?
Yeah, lots of news again this week. Quickly, I just wanted to shout out that we recently had on Greg Loring Albrecht on as a guest on our Scum and Villainy episode, talking about his new project, Keep the Faith. And that game is now live on BackerKit. I'll drop the link down below, in collaboration with Central Michigan University Press. So you can go back and listen to that Scum and Villainy episode to hear a little more about his inspiration and what he's trying to achieve there. But in short, it was basically a communal storytelling game about the evolution of a faith, a religion, over the course of like 500 years, I think was the time scale, and how it evolves and shifts. And I think it's almost competitive, I believe, looking into it. Like, you were each character with their own sub goals, trying to push things in different ways. So fascinating if you're interested in sort of theology and storytelling, and supposedly big into like introductory storytelling mechanics that is looking to onboard some perhaps board gamers who aren't as familiar with those more sort of TTRPG storytelling games.
It's really impressive how long the timescales of modern day RPGs, especially solo games, are since, I guess, that 1,000-year-old vampire kind of blew open the doors on this sort of wide-ranging timescale.
Cool. Something that fascinates me. Another project I'll be bringing up in very shortly. But was there anything else you had to any news for you these days?
Yeah, well, it hardly seems like news, so I'm going to just ignore the PSN downtime. That's in the past, right?
It was an inconvenience, shall we say.
Exactly. We don't have to worry about all of our video games being tied to always online, constantly updated and tracked server environments. Not at all. We don't have to worry about it, because the powers that be will give us upwards of 5 extra days of PS Plus time should the network go down for, I think it was close to 24 hours or a decent amount of time.
I remember that happening like years ago when I had a PS3, I believe. Have not been into that ecosystem in a while. But I mean, all the more reason to start having a backup portable retro device, perhaps.
Yeah, for sure. I think actually PSN experienced, what was it, 2 or 3 weeks of downtime more recently than that. It was just a couple of years ago, I believe. And that time, I think PSN was just throwing out free games for compensation. That seems to be their strategy. But you're right, tying to always online networks is a bit of a risk.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's everything is temporary these days. No one owns anything.
There you go. All right, tell us about some more news or games.
Yeah, so I last episode chatted a little bit about Zion Quest, although I guess more correctly called Zion Month. Zion Quest being the Kickstarter initiative, but it has escaped containment and spread out into some other platforms as well. So more widely known as Zion Month. I've been exploring several more projects there. And I also wanted to double back to one I discussed last episode called The Bonds Between, a collaboration between Bright Barge Games and Graftbound Press. And something I'd missed when I discussed about it is that you're playing two dragons. It's a duet game. You're each playing a dragon, and you're exploring the sort of relationships and rituals, spells that define your relationship. But the way you're doing that is with a regular deck of cards that you're modifying over the course of the game, which is a concept I was particularly fascinated by. Like, you're marking them up and like drawing over some of the artworks as representational of your relationship. The reason I bring that up is that there was another game I discovered also having you take a pair of scissors and markers to a regular deck of cards, and that is Fukuzatsu, Torred Poker from Neon Rot. So this is still up on Kickstarter right now, and it's basically competitive Bellatro, I think, is the selling point. You each have your own standard deck of cards that you're playing poker. Like, basically, it's a deck builder. You're not using this one central deck of cards. You each have your own playing poker. Then you also have, like, a tarot deck that you're using to manipulate each other's decks permanently. Like, you can cut up other people's cards or mark them up to, like, change the values of them, much like in Bellatro. So you've got more than four races optimizing your deck there. So that's just a fascinating concept. It's got a very cool sort of alternative art style, a little bit cyberpunky almost. So very cool to check that out. There's a few different modes. There's a solo mode. There's a war game mode in there somewhere. So lots of options to explore. I'm always one to go for like the big deluxe all-in versions of these, but this is one where I was sort of drawn to get the PDF and like kit bash my own sort of very much zine aesthetic. Like get some old antique biscuit tin and like a dog-eared tattered tarot deck that I can sort of look like an ancient artifact perhaps.
Yeah, I feel like with this game, along with the original Bellatro, kind of the lowest fidelity fits in with the aesthetic. And I should clarify that the game that's up on crowdfunding right now is called Fukuzatsu Plus.
Right.
The original game is out already.
Oh,
You can go access it on itch.io. I've actually been chatting with the designer Neon Rot, and they've been generous enough to provide us with a copy of their existing Fukuzatsu to check out. So yeah, plus the current Kickstarter campaign. I'm not sure if it's Kickstarter.
It is. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds really exciting. It's sort of like like you said, a deluxe mode with all those additional play styles available.
And there is like a tarot deck, like a physical reward. You can get a tarot deck with all of that artwork and deluxe tin or whatever it is you want to go with there, or customize your own.
Right. There you go. So on the theme of crowdfunding, another piece of news I have is that I just heard that there is going to be, don't worry, there's a video game connection, a official Legacy of Kain official encyclopedia and tabletop role-playing game.
Oh.
That's upcoming, I believe. I should check out the account page right now. It is on BackerKit, and it's actually running. I thought I was ahead of the curve, but apparently I'm a little bit behind. It's got 12 days to go as of recording, so it should probably end near the end of February. So get right on that if you're interested. Although the reason primarily why I mentioned it is twofold. I played the Legacy of Kain games, both of them. I think there's a digital remaster coming out for newer systems, but if I'm not mistaken, this was like Xbox One era video games.
Sounds about right. I never actually played them myself.
No. Yeah, I played at least through the first one, and I had a really favorable experience with them. I forget the makers, but it's sort of around the time of the original Tomb Raiders. And this game reminded me of a older game based off of angels and devils and demons called, what was it, Gargoyle's Quest, that I played on original Game Boy. Do you remember Gargoyle's Quest?
No, it's a bit before my time, I think.
It was a bit of a series, actually. There were multiple games on the Gargoyle series, and they're totally unrelated, but Legacy of Kain kind of reminded me of it thematically. I played it, and it has kind of a cool demonish character with limited flight ability. So that they certainly share. So those games are well worth playing if you can find them on those original systems, or a retro console, but a remaster is coming out. But the second reason why I mentioned this campaign is that it troubles me slightly, because this, along with some other TTRPGs based off of licenses I've seen recently, seem to be doing this encyclopedia plus tabletop role-playing game thing, which
coffee
really
table book.
Exactly. Yeah. It sounds like a puffed up coffee table book. This really kind of gives me the heebie-jeebies, because if you're going to be a coffee table book or a collector's item, I don't know how successful you can be as a,
you've got to pick a lane
as a game, as a tool that needs to be used. Sure, you can treat some games as collector's items, but if it's designed to be a collector's item, is it going to be a valid game? I don't know. I don't know who's involved with this project. It's produced by someone called Lost in Cult.
Oh, yeah, I know. They did one based on Sleeper Citizen as well. They had like an art book and like a tarot deck TTRPG that I was very interested in getting, but very high shipping costs from, I think it's coming from the UK. So
yeah. That is a pain with lots of crowdfunding campaigns for sure. But I'm still skeptical about these sort of tie-in conversions. Crystal Dynamics, by the way, is the makers of the original game
that
series.
That was Tomb Raider, same developer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, right.
Yep. And Gex, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Anyways, I'm into the world. I'm into the original games. So I'm going to keep an open mind. I'm not going to back the campaign, but I'm curious to see what the general opinion is when that thing arrives in real world.
Yeah, well, it sounds like it's very much aimed towards people who are super fans of that series. So if you're one of those, you'll know if this is for you, basically. I did see that Noclip, Denny O'Dwyer over and his team have done a documentary on Legacy of Kain just a couple of months ago. Okay. I haven't caught up that yet, but go check that out if you're into the series.
Yeah, and if you think that this trend is going to stop anytime soon, I think you're mistaken. Basically, Cosmere, the Brandon Sanderson-themed coffee table book / TTRPG was like the largest crowdfunded tabletop game of all time. So this trend is going to continue. You mark my words.
Oh, yeah. There'll be people chasing that dragon for sure. Speaking earlier of the inevitable passage of time that comes for us all, a couple of other quick zine month projects I wanted to shout out. One called Heavy Weighs the Crown. So this is a collaboration between Jason Price, designer of Notorious, a game I've been trying to track down, and Jack Harrison, who's done a series of games, the Artifact series, I think it's called. A Bucket of Bolts is another one, where basically you're following an item over a period of time. So Bucket of Bolts is basically a Millennium Falcon, or in this case, Heavy Weighs the Crown. As you can imagine, you're following a crown over its many owners through its ups and downs of a kingdom. And it's a fascinating.
Let me guess. There's one about a sword, right? There's got to be one about.
That's probably sword. Artifact, I imagine. This is a very sort of short, sort of brochure style zine. It's not like a super in depth system, but it seems like a fascinating concept that you can use as a sort of world building inspiration for a longer campaign that you might be planning, or just something you could play solo to experience a fun little story there. And again, I've been very fascinated by that sort of. The zoomed out passage of time. It reminds me of games of like Massive Chalice. It was like an XCOM game where you're sort of following a family over multiple generations and how a family evolves. So, very very interested in that as a theme. So curious to see that. I backed that one myself.
Very nice. Lots of crowdfunding going on, even though the shipping is a killer.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's the one thing with Zine Month is that even for a relatively small zine, the shipping can be just as much as the zine itself. That said, Heavy Weighs the Crown was free shipping. I say was because, unfortunately, that campaign is over. But it's still worth mentioning if you're interested, keep an eye on it. It will be hitting your favorite zine store shortly.
Very cool. All right. Any other news you want to cover?
Yeah, just one other one. Also, unfortunately, the campaign has since ended since we missed that last episode. But I wanted to mention anyway because it sounds like such a cool concept. That is Prequel, another zine from Ethan Yen and James Quigley. Basically, it throws you straight into the final fight, big tactical combat with the final big boss. But over the course of that fight, you are then flashing back to the quest, how you got here, and sort of retroactively defining your abilities and relationships over the course of this one fight. It reminds me a little bit of Frieren, an anime I've been watching, which starts out with the big bad having just been killed and sort of retroactively exploring relationships. So again, another fascinating way of exploring the passage of time. We've talked a little bit lately in terms of Scum and Villainy about the power of the flashbacks and how that can be used to sort of frame a narrative and sort of trigger that sort of emotional resonance sort of in a very interesting way. So yeah, curious to check out the Prequel.
Yep. Frieren is really cool. it's lost a little bit of steam for me now that it's kind of past the first few episodes, but I'll keep watching it. The initial premise is just too strong.
I struggle to keep up with it. I've like stopped watching it multiple times. It's a very slow show, but the concept that is just very The concept is just so strong. Very, very wistful passage of time. surely hit you in the feels.
Yeah, the pacing is not the problem for me. It's just that the show kind of experiences like a shift in the premise. Like they basically become a different show about 8 or 10 episodes in or something like that. I'm reading the manga, so I'm a little bit ahead.
Interesting.
Anyways, that's a different talk. All right, I just remembered I had one more crowdfunding project that I should mention. I just backed it. I think it's actually closed now, but you can do late back. No, I'm wrong. 8 more days. Excellent. So if you jump right on it when this episode comes out, you can check it out. This is, of course, for the Duet game. You mentioned Duet games before. It's called Against Time and Death. And this one is based on themes that you and I are both interested. It's directly inspired by a book that you and I have both read called This Is How You Lose the Time War.
Yes.
That's the name of it.
Yeah.
Right. Essentially, two sort of opposing figures, kind of like spy versus spy, sniping at each other across the gulf of time and eras using sci-fi tools. And they correspond to each other via letters, essentially, recorded messages. And that's the format of the game. And it sounded very intriguing to me. If you go to the Kickstarter page against Time and Death, you can actually hear a actual play preview of it. And that's what really got me hooked. It's produced by Black Armada Tales. I think one of the producers of that podcast is the author of this game. And they did a really fantastic job. You get to hear their first few episodes. And the exchange is 8 letters in total. Mm. So I think each player writes 4, I believe. And basically, you just pass these letters back and forth. You can actually play it asynchronous.
I was about to ask. Yeah, it sounds very cool. That's one I've been looking to explore as well, not just in duet games, but I've been reading about the trend of sort of play by mail and sort of remote TTRPGs. So yeah, it's fascinating to explore other modes of play, especially as we struggle with scheduling there. But yeah, again, another game exploring the passage of time over even a much longer time span. I've only read half of that book. I had to return it to the library, couldn't get through it, but have been meaning to get back to that. And I think there was a second game that was also very explicitly inspired by that same book. It was The Words We Left Behind. No, The Words We Leave Behind was another game in Zine Month. So yeah, very very much in the zeitgeist, that theme right now.
Yeah, very fruitful ground. And I think, quite honestly, the TTRPG space is some of the most exciting game design happening of all media at this time. But you know, you'll have to see the proof is in the pudding when we play the game.
Well, I mean, these zines are able to explore much more niche concepts that might not necessarily be marketable on a grand scale, but can still be very emotionally impactful. Very
That's
cool.
Right. And if it's meaningful for just a small audience, then it's been a success.
Exactly.
Okay. Shall we talk about games we've been playing now?
Yeah. Let's take a look at that. I've been sampling quite a few different things these last few weeks. I don't have any strong feelings about a lot of these, but I will chat about a couple. Let me see. Where should we start? I want to talk about, last episode I mentioned that there was a new game that we'd seen at the Vancouver Game Garden, yet another killing game, had released. And since then, another game that we'd saw there has also released. That is Rift of the Necrodancer from Brace Yourself Games. So they originally did a game, was it Crypt of the Necrodancer, I believe, which was like a Zelda style game where you basically having to play in rhythm. Like you have to move and attack to the rhythm of the music. And I think I did an actual Zelda crossover, Cadence of Hyrule. I believe, which I've not played either of those games, but they've now got Rift of the Necrodancer, ostensibly connected, I think maybe in the same universe, but this is basically more of an actual Guitar Hero game in that you've got 3 lanes coming down the center of the screen, and like there's monsters coming down those lanes towards you. You have to hit the buttons as the monster sort of crosses the threshold. Those monsters all have different behaviors. Some need to be hit in different time beats. You might have to hit them on 2 subsequent time beats or hit them 2 or 3 times within 1 time beat. Yes. So did you have a chance to play this, Mark?
No, I didn't get a chance to demo it. I did play, there was a couple of rhythm games actually at that showing when we showed up there, but that booth was pretty busy. But the demo, the graphics, the art looked really fantastic, really lively, a lot of personality. Everything seems like kinetic, obviously, because it's based off of music.
Yes.
The pumping beat is just everything's pulsing in time. It was really quite a delight to look at.
Yeah, that is to say, I've played the demo for this. I've not played the full product, but there's a demo on Steam that I've played through a couple of songs for. There's like a tutorial and two or three songs included. I struggled a little bit to get the hang of this. Like it just teaches you the tutorial how like there's 20 different monsters that all act in different ways and different beats, and it's hard to memorize what they all do until you've actually played the level and learnt their behavior. It's hard to sense when you're in the moment how they're acting, because there's so little time. Because like the red skeletons you have to hit twice on one beat, but the blue skeletons you have to hit on two beats in a row, but the blue slimes act in a different way. Like there was a little bit of inconsistency I felt in the color schemes between the monsters. So it would definitely help this if you have some musical theory knowledge and are able to sort of time multiple sort of time beats in your head. But that said, the music itself is excellent. Denny Baranowski, I think his name is, from Super Meat Boy and Binding of Isaac, has done a lot of the music here, and that is excellent. There's also several other musical artists here as well. And it's basically a slightly more thematic Guitar Hero with the monsters and some fun characters. So if you're into that, I mean, I'm always looking for a return to the nostalgia of Guitar Hero. So yeah, and I had a good time with that. The demo available now, that is Rift of the Necrodancer.
Very cool. All right, I'm going to mention another piece of hardware. I'm going to continue on with the trend. I'm not going to talk as long as I did when I talked about the SP the other day, but I'm going to talk about another AmberNick device, which I got my hands on. I would show it to you, but I've actually already returned it to the seller. This device is called the AmberNick RG 406H. So it was a horizontally spanned device.
H for horizontal, got it.
There you go. And it is slightly more expensive and slightly more powerful than the SP, and it's Android based, which I wanted to try out. It's essentially the guts of a cell phone in a controller with a controller bolted on, which sounded promising to me. But when I tried it, there were just too many compromises. First of all, this thing is small, but bigger than the SP, but it was not ergonomic enough to be comfortable. It had a larger 4-inch screen, which 4-inch screen is doesn't sound very large, but it's bigger than the SP. But because of the way the UI works, because it's Android and it's touch-based, it was actually too small and cramped to get in there and actually control with your fingers. And it wasn't D-pad oriented, let's just say, right? The custom firmwares that are on devices like the SP, the Miu Mini, the Trim UI Brick are all very cut down, very simplistic, very easily navigable by D-pad. That's what they're designed to do. And they're based off of a really custom Linux-based OS. So they're quite seamless and zippy. But Android, in this instance, was a little bit too slow to handle the D-pad very well, or maybe a little bit more complex. Like just typing in things.
Your latency there?
No, it's just too small to get your fingers on the screen. 4 inches is just too small. So there was too many compromises there, and it promised to run upwards of PS2 and GameCube games, which I was very interested to try on. And PSP as well, but it didn't run them at anything approaching real-time speed. So that was highly disappointing. So not really worth it. I figure there are some devices that are great for retro games and you should keep it retro. And then there's more powerful devices that are for more recent devices.
Yeah.
And if you need to go to that level, spend the proper amount of money.
I mean, the Steam Deck is out there, right? You've got all the Switch. Between those two, you've got quite a bit of flexibility. If you want those true old school games, you don't necessarily need a giant like brick of a yeah. handheld. You want something relatively small.
Ironically, I've had that Lenovo Legion Go for a while. I've had Steam Deck in the past, and I think they're almost too big for those retro games.
I really want something with like the Vita scale. Vita's really great. Good balance.
Yeah, the Vita is a fantastic screen, and I can attest that it works really great for retro emulation if you know how to set it up. So let's just say for the 406H, just didn't cut the mustard. I already had to return it right away. Thankfully, the seller was very receptive for a return.
Well, there's some silver linings there. So, yeah, since you were talking about these last episode, I was doing some research into retro devices and looked into some of the options out there. And there's a few ones that were tempting, like the Retroid Pocket, which is sort of a slightly more Switch-like tablet device. But I ended up settling on the SP, the one that you were showing off last episode. That clamshell just got me in the right nostalgia. So I've got that on the way. Very nice. Yes, that is yours, Mark. I went with the other thing that got me was there was a color scheme that was like the Famicom, the purpley gray. So that got me over the edge. So I've got that on the way. Looking forward to checking that out. Perhaps we can review some true retro games.
Absolutely. It would be my pleasure. I have some tips and tricks to share with you since I've been kind of knees in the mud of some of the customization options there.
Yes, ironing out those kinks for me. Very good.
Yeah, there you go. Learn from my experience. I must admit, those makers really do tug on your nostalgic heartstrings with those retro design colors.
Yeah, the SNES is another color scheme I've seen quite a bit, and that's very tempting.
Yeah, for sure. This is not the last hardware device I've ordered, so there might be a few more mentions.
You need more than one of these.
Yeah, if you have the illness like I do, then you do. But anyways, tell us about another game you're playing.
I've been dabbling in a few newer games, again not quite ready to talk about yet, but one I've been returning to and trying to push through is Metaphor: ReFantazio. We've discussed this a little bit in the past, but I'm deep enough in now to have solidified some of my feelings. Namely, I was a little concerned with the way the game had encouraged you to basically mix and match the parties, the classes. Because in Persona previously, you had your companions all had their own sort of abilities, and that never changed. What did change was you basically collecting this Pokemon and then forcing them to fuse into new combinations to unlock your powers for your playable character. This is a little different here, whereas there's like 20 something classes, and any character can be any of those classes, and so you really want to mix and match. And any particular dungeon has like broad weaknesses that are likely to be common or uncommon that you can basically pay for like intel to find out. Oh, there's you really want to have some piercing attack going into this dungeon, or you definitely don't want any mages going in here. These monsters hate mages. Having to plan around that, I felt would be tedious. Not as bad as I thought, though. And I'm actually coming to really enjoy that mixing and matching, partly because there's some quality of life sort of improvements as you unlock abilities that make it a lot easier. Basically, you can do it in the menu at any time. You don't have to be bouncing back and forth between the special room where you have to do it. You don't have to go around collecting Pokemon to arbitrarily fuse. It's just you pick a class on the menu and you're good to go. I'm really having fun there, sort of trying to find the best combo and optimizing that for each dungeon. And it's very so streamlined in so many ways that the Persona games previously were not.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that sort of party building, party build out process that ReFantazio lets you do. It's much more interesting than the Persona games because, like you said, I don't believe your teammates. I think they were stuck to one persona, isn't that right? Mm. Through the course of an entire Persona game, which really limited the variety of strategies that you could implement. And then this, of course, blows it wide open. I believe each of your characters, your party members, and your main character can sort of inherit abilities from other character classes.
Yes, yeah.
What are they called? Persona types?
Yeah, you can basically choose one or later multiple abilities from other classes. You have to, like, it's a currency that you have to spend that on, which I've had plenty of. That's not really a concern. But you can, like, really stack up a bunch of passive abilities on one character, or you can make sure that everyone has a fire ability, for example. If you have to have a fire attack in this dungeon, you don't want to play a mage for whatever reason.
Yeah, it's almost kind of like multi-classing, and I really appreciate that. It reminds me a lot of Final Fantasy Tactics, which I'm playing a lot. I played, if it's all right, I'm going to segue right into it, because yesterday you and I played in person. I'm not going to talk about any of the games that you and I played, but I went out of the house for the first time in a long time. Basically, I don't like commute ever.
Yes.
Yes, I don't commute ever. I know it's a real problem because I work from home. My kids go to school across the street. And I, like, get groceries delivered to me. So maybe I'll walk 3 blocks down to my friendly local game store and play there. But this time, I took transit. So I took transit. I took the SP with me in my bag. And while I was waiting to transfer and waiting for the next bus to come, the next train to come, I was playing Game Boy Advance games. I was playing Final Fantasy Tactics. And the SP has the closing clamshell lid. You can close and suspend. Pick it up again. The game's right there waiting for you. You got the save states. I played that for, I don't know, maybe a couple hours.
Oh, wow. Long bus ride, huh?
Well, okay. I played it for a while. I got home and a lot of my family was still out, and I still played it at home, even though I had the 4K TV in front of me. I played, I don't know, like 3 hours of Final Fantasy Tactics Advance yesterday. And yeah, I'll say it again. Like, the form factor encourages a form factor that encourages you to play the game helps you play the game. So that's why this device is really working for me.
Yeah, I mean, I still haven't decided how I'm going to approach accessing games on this device, shall we say. But I mean, the reason piracy was very popular as it was is just ease of use. And as publishers started making older games more accessible and easier to access, piracy started to go away for a long time, right? Now they're cracking down again, and the cyclical nature continues. So yeah, I haven't figured out what I'm doing there. I'm not going to own up to anything, shall we say. But ease of use is king, right?
Yeah, like I said, I'm playing games that I have physical copies of. So my conscience is entirely clear. Yeah. But just imagine having your entire retro game collection of 30 years in your pocket.
Mm.
Just the options are mind-boggling.
Yeah.
So that's why I love it. All right. Sorry, I snuck into your game coverage there. You want to talk about another game you've been playing?
Yeah, I mean, are you done with video games for now? Or shall you
anything else? I think I am. I'm just continuing to play. I played through some more Visions of Mana. That was really cool. I had to return it. But just before I returned it to the library, there was a really big tone shift. So it wasn't all bubbles and rainbows. And that just hooked me even more. I can't wait till that copy comes back to me from the library.
Sorry to say, I put that on hold, so it's going to be another week delayed getting back to you.
Hey, then we'll be able to compare notes, so that's fantastic.
Very cool.
And playing some more Legend of Heroes Trails to the Sky. That game is absolutely charming. There's nothing about it that's like wowing me, but just maybe the thing that's I'm appreciating the most is like it's just kind of like fun and funny. And it doesn't take itself too seriously, which is great.
So I saw, while I'm waiting for the remake of that game to come out later this year, I saw that another Trails game just got released a week or so ago. I can't remember, these names are all the same. But Trails of Remembrance or something. Basically, I decided to check what the last one was, the previous Trails game from 2021, I think it was. And I picked up that from the library. Haven't booted it up yet.
Yeah. But is that Daybreak?
Yeah, Trails from Daybreak. That's the one, yeah.
Too many Trails of series upon series. I mean, I'm happy that they're having the success that they've long deserved, Nippon Falcom. But yeah, too many difficult to remember names, I'll tell you. There you go. Should we move on to tabletop?
Yeah, I've got a couple to talk about here. And again, I've been sampling a lot of board games, but like sampling a little bit here, a little bit there. I want to allow a little more time, but one I definitely want to talk about a little bit at least is Critter Kitchen. This is from Cardboard Alchemy. Came out on Kickstarter fulfillment just a couple of weeks ago. I think it's still being fulfilled to those in the States. So it's we rare case of Canada getting things first. So this is basically from the makers of Flamecraft, which I don't know if did you ever play Flamecraft, Mark?
That's the dragon-ish one, right?
Yes, yeah.
I did not play it, but I can picture the box like very clear as day, very kind of colorful and vibrant looking Euro game, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I played it once and found the mechanically very light. It was basically collecting resources, fulfilling recipes, not particularly fulfilling mechanically to me, but a game that was carried by its presentation and its theme, the artwork from Sandara Teng, I think it was just so delightful that that was strong enough by itself to carry the relatively light, simple mechanics. And like, I mean, obviously, tolerance of puns and then like all the punny names of the shops in that game, notwithstanding, your tolerance may vary. So going into Critter Kitchen with sort of similar expectations, that this did seem to be a heavier game, but same artist coming to this as well. So I was looking forward to that presentation. This has you basically collecting ingredients and putting together recipes for a cooking competition. There's a critic who's going to run, have you prepare a meal at the end of the game, and it's largely in preparation of that final challenge. We've had a couple of mini challenges over the course of the game. So the real strength here is in the drafting. So there's various ingredients of various types sort of randomly spawning at various locations. And you, in order to grab those, you basically, everyone's simultaneously declaring which location they want to go to with cards played face down simultaneously. But you'll have three workers, and one worker can only carry one thing, but will always go first. One character can carry two things, but will always go after the first worker, and then the biggest worker can carry three things but will always go last. And so there's immediately this friction of like trying to balance that. Well, I really want this one ingredient. I've got to, make sure I have to grab that. Or do I be greedy and try to get a whole bunch of ingredients from this location? And so that was really satisfying, especially that simultaneous reveal. Oftentimes, it's going to come down to a lot of chaos in as to what you get. You're going to end up with a lot of crumbs, essentially, or everything that's not picked is sort of scrunched together, or you make a soup out of at the end of a round. But yeah, that is incredibly satisfying, that trying to balance so many micro decisions between where you're going to put your workers, trying to outguess everyone else. This game is a game that understands the power of the reveal, both in that the moment you reveal your cards to which location you're going to, but also in the meal at the end of the particular challenges, both during and at the end of the game, you sort of revealing, you pull up your player screen protecting your board, you reveal what you've made. And it's not going to matter to everyone else, only in how many points you get, but it's still it's a great theatricality to this game, pulling back the curtains and revealing what you made, much like Great British Bake Off or MasterChef, any of those sort of cooking competition shows. The moment of the reveal that has a lot of power, right? And so I think if you're really willing to lean into the theme of this, especially like you might have, whatever three ingredients you've used, you might come up with an explanation of what you think this meal actually is. It's going to be very abstracted as far as the game goes, but you could always invent a dish and sort of play into that theme a little more. So if you're willing to lean into that theatricality, I think there's a lot to enjoy here. The mechanics are a little light. They're definitely heavier than Flamecraft. Some of the heaviness felt a little illusory, just in how close our points were. I was playing, it was only a two-player game. So this is a very low sample size, but one two-player game. But our score was basically neck and neck, this exact same score until the very end moment of the game. So I definitely want to play it with more and see how things vary between players, between player counts. There's a lot of variety in what abilities both each character has, what the final challenge is. I want to see if that variety helps break things up a bit. But had a great time with Critter Kitchen.
Very nice. Sounds cool. I don't have a lot of board game experience this week, but I do have one. I tried out something new on Board Game Arena. So I tried out, I noticed that there was another video game to board game conversion. So I was curious to try it out. And this one is based on a very popular game called Dead Cells. Have you tried out the Dead Cells, the roguelite board game?
Yeah. No, I did see that it was on Board Game Arena, but I'm reluctant to play a game for the first time online. I always want my first experience to be in person if possible, because I've been burned a few times.
Well, you could be right. You could be very wise to do that. I tried out the tutorial and I could not complete it because it was so dull. This game, as far opposed to the Slay the Spire full episode review that we did, is nothing like Dead Cells, the action roguelite game, as you might imagine. There is control of characters, there is destroying of monsters, but I think it's much more in line with the kind of like Thunderstone school of thought, in that you're just kind of like whacking away at cardboard
jumping and cause chaos
at you. Yeah, it didn't really capture me, even though it's an Anton Bauza design apparently. But I just could not make myself complete the tutorial, but perhaps there's something at the table, but I doubt it for myself. Anyways, my interest level is kind of on the floor with this one.
Was that tutorial sort of built into the Board Game Arena? Like, was it an official sort of board game tutorial, so interactive, or was it just
that's right.
Okay.
Very yeah, cool. It's just kind of click here, step here. I wasn't interested enough to follow along. So I don't know, maybe that says more about me, but that one didn't really capture me.
Yeah, I have heard a couple of friends anecdotally say they've really enjoyed it. I have heard things go both ways. This game does seem to have a very mixed reaction. I am curious to see how it manages that roguelike element in contrast to Slay the Spire, especially Dead Cells being a much more action oriented game and like very high momentum. I don't know how a board game could sort of hold the tone of that video game particularly well.
Seems like a bit of a mismatch, to be honest.
I mean, it would definitely need a lot more adaptation, as it were. Slay the Spire doesn't need much, as we discussed. It sort of works out of the box to some extent.
For sure. It's like, how do you make Metroid the board game? I mean, I guess you could, but it would be very different of an experience. A bit of a stretch.
Yeah, okay. I'm still keen to check that out, but I'll probably wait till I can try it in person and make sure I give it its full weight of it. Cool.
Very cool. All right. So you want to talk about any more board games?
No. I think we'll keep this one short, and I've got a little bit of tabletop stuff to talk about.
Yeah, let's do it.
Well, speaking of roguelites, I play one that kind of fits into that oeuvre as well. This is I Crave the Loop. This is from Jonathan Boyle at Breitbart, who I discussed previously is one of the collaborators on Bonds Between, that Kickstarter project. So this is one of his sort of zines that came out last year, I think it was. It's basically he calls it a snack time roguelite. If you have a cat and you've tried to play a game with a bowl of popcorn while fending off said cat, you'll be well prepared for the vibe this game is going for. So basically, it's it's a solo game where it's you versus a stalking predator, a being from beyond who wants those snacks. So in this case, you actually have a literal bowl of snacks, whether that's some pretzels or some cereal, like Cheerios is the sort of the iconic representation in the game. I used Jaffas. I don't think you have them here. They're like sort of orange coated malt balls from Australia or Britain, but it was something that had a bit of weight to it, that each individual snack had a weight, because that acts as the timer of the game. You can have I think I had 10, you can go up to like 15 or 20 to sort of dictate how long the game's going to go for. So you have a map, you're moving around, you're rolling dice to move around this map and then alternating with the monster moving to chase you down. So very much cat and mouse, where you are the mouse in this case. It feels like it feels a little bit like Amnesia. Only those sort of games where you're sort of you're having to jump into a closet and hide from the being it's stalking outside, or Alien Isolation, for example. So it's a little like Amnesia, but if the monster was a cat trying to steal your was trying to steal your Cheerios, as yes, you're quite experienced with there. Do you have some Cheerio dust in your beard there, Mark?
No, this one is actually a coffee addict. So anytime they can get coffee or tea, they're right in there.
Mine's all about the Cheez-Its, the Cheetos for the Americans out there, basically. Anything salty. So yeah, this game, it's very luck-based. Like, you roll dice, move so many spaces. It rolls dice, moves that many spaces. But you can stop at any time to take a snack, in which time you have to, like, basically you don't get to move for that turn. You drop crumbs on the floor that can lead as a distraction. But obviously you're giving the monster time to catch up to you. The trick is there are also items scattered around the map that you can pick up. And that's where the sort of the roguelite elements come in. It might be the one I kept picking up was like a model train set that I could set as a trap, and then the creature would land on the train and get catapulted to the other side of the room. Or it was like a shuriken or like a chakra, I think it was, that I could sort of throw as a distraction, or a laser pointer. Or there was even like a, I think, one thing I didn't find in the basement was like, it was a retro game console that you then rolled dice to see which game was, you turned up on the console to give you some additional power. So there was like, there's something like 10 different maps in this game. Every map has like a couple dozen items that are seemingly unique. So there's quite a lot of replayability here. And it's just a bit of a chaos simulator. Like, it's not necessarily going to be fair. The game's going to be very random. Like, you're rolling the dice to see how far you can get. Sometimes you'll just roll bad and lose. That's the deal with it. But curiously, it's very interesting to see this come from the TTRPG scene, because this feels like more board game than TTRPG. This is one of those games that really got me thinking about how we define RPGs, and not that it's particularly useful to just get into the taxonomy of it, but it highlights this as the arbitrariness of what we define as board game versus TTRPG. But coming from the TTRPG side of things, there is a little more bit of a leniency in the rules. Like, some of the rules aren't completely clear cut, I will say, but there are times where it will say, well, just move the creature as many spaces feels appropriate. So you're kind of GMing yourself to an extent. You're just coming up with what feels balanced and fair to you in the moment. So rather than a fully balanced, sort of tight, mechanical sort of board game rule set that you'd be expecting. So yeah, it's very fascinating to see that sort of philosophy there. So yeah, had a good time with this. It feels like you're Kevin from Home Alone, but instead of protecting from the wet bandits, you're protecting from a cat who wants your Cheetos and setting up all these elaborate traps around your house. So yeah, fun little experience.
Very nice. Another interesting theme from the TTRPG space.
Yeah.
Speaking of, I think you said when I saw you yesterday that you were working on, I don't know, gathering tools to help you do some more fun journaling with your gaming.
Yeah.
And I wanted to show off a new tool that my youngest child prepared for me. It's a fun kind of bedazzled pencil case, ostensibly from Artbox, which is like a Korean kind of decoration style thing you find in certain malls. But I just wanted to show off that it's large enough to hold a little journal.
Oh, cute.
And inside here is where I've been holding my pencil and eraser and a couple of dice for my solo RPG journal. So I've cracked it open. I've written out some of my experiences lately. It's all washed out on the screen. But this is my all-in-one solo RPG kit. And I have a bunch of these like blank notebooks that I've gotten for my leather-bound notes. So I used this to help me play a new game, or a new-to-me game, recently called Transformation. This is a game that you provided me.
Yes.
and it's from the publisher Absurdist Productions.
Yeah, so I picked this up at PAX Unplugged. I was chatting to the fellows there over there at Absurdist. They actually have created some board games as well. Winter Rabbit, I believe, is their upcoming one. And Paleo Vet, I think, is one that's already out. So they do both, board games and TTRPGs.
Very cool. And it looks like they have another game called At Least Seven Murders Till Midnight. This is a lovely bookmark that was provided as well. And this seems like it uses the same system, which is this, like, basically clubs are mean one thing, spades mean another thing, and then the hearts plus diamonds mean a different third thing. Hmm. And the theme of transformation is that you're essentially, it's about the monster you are becoming, which is the subtitle. So imagine, like, things like, I don't know, like The Fly, mm-hmm. or Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, that sort of thing. So it's very, I think, a fruitful topic for a solo-based game. And one that I really actually got into as I was playing this. I've only played the first few in-game days. And I think the game tops out, from what I can see, at 7 days. So I actually got halfway through. I completed 3 full in-game days. And it's kind of cool. It's like you start a day, then you pull some of those aforementioned playing cards, and you flip them, and depending on the result, you sort of branch into these choose-your-own-adventure-style scenarios. So your transformation each day opens up a new aspect to your transformation. Hmm. So we talked the other day about sort of like the arc of a game. Mm. And this game has a very, very propulsive arc because you have a very mild sort of symptoms or signs of your transformation to start. I think my first one was sort of like, I forget what it was. It was more mental. And then my second one was much more, oh yeah, I could see in the dark. Mm. And, you know, that you could hide that sort of thing, right? It's like, oh, well, my life is not that different because I can see in the dark. But I sort of went with it from a narrative perspective. And the second one was much less something you could hide. I think my, like, skin was starting to crack, and then, like, light was emitting out of my skin or something like that. So
a little more conspicuous, yeah.
Exactly. So you can imagine that while this is going on, a person's mental state, mm-hmm. and emotional state could be sort of unraveling, right?
So is this something you were trying to achieve while you're going through these transformations, like to set the stakes?
There is no hard target. I think the target is survival. Mm. And it has an interesting other narrative device, which is the companion. So in this game, you're you're forced to create a companion. And there is a sort of a table that is a create your own companion generator at the end. And this is not intended to be a real person, right? And this game is also not intended to be you. This is intended to be a fictional character because, you know, content warnings are probably a good idea with this game.
Yeah.
It has a lot of overtones, right? So I, for instance, the premise was some sort of case where you are isolated. So because of everything that's been going on in world politics right now, I was thinking I would put myself in the shoes of an undocumented person, right? So this is someone living in modern day times, but they're isolated because maybe they're hiding from immigration enforcement, right? So maybe they're working under the table. Maybe they are running from the law or something like that. Mm. So I thought that would be a fruitful opportunity, and it was right. So my companion was someone that I didn't start my journey with, but maybe someone I met along the way, like a coyote or something like that. Mm. And that really created for some interesting scenarios. And this companion is supposed to be your, like, a sounding board. So I'm glad that this was not a real me. This was not really me. And this was not really a person I knew.
Yeah. Because
we were more free to explore touchy subject matter.
Are you interacting with this from journaling? Or is there some other sort of mechanical implementation?
Yeah, that's right. So okay. Basically, with each transformation, it gives you a few prompts, writing prompts, and the outcome of the card flip kind of gives you a very clear direction. So if in metaphorical terms, it makes you go north, northwest, as opposed to, you know, southeast or something like that. It could be a really positive one, or it could be a really freeing one, or it could be a really nerve-wracking transformation. The companion could support you. They could turn on you. They could hate you. They could betray you. So it's a real roller coaster ride narratively. But what it forced me to do was just kind of go with the flow and not censor myself.
Yeah, and it's especially a solo game, it's something of a safe space, right? It can help you explore difficult themes in a safe space that you're not going to feel judged with. And I've been thinking in terms of an analogy I've always enjoyed with horror is that horror can act as a sort of inoculation against certain feelings and emotions, that just experiencing those emotions and working through it and processing them somewhere in your own time. It can be powerful.
Both horror and science fiction, you know, kind of has that ability to be like a lens upon real painful subject matter or real important subject matter without like clearly spelling that out. So obviously transformation, you could look at this and talk about, you know, really any transformation. You can talk about growing older. You can talk about puberty. You can talk about maybe it's literal, like changing your gender, changing your identity, immigrating, you know, that's a sort of a transformation. So really the connections that you could make to real life things are very, very evident and plain.
It's the flexibility to draw your own connections there.
Right. Yeah. Like for instance, you know, I'm an immigrant. That's my background. So it was kind of easier for me to put myself in the place of a undocumented person coming to a new place. Although that's not a life I've lived, but hopefully, you know, that gives me a little bit more empathy towards a situation that I haven't experienced. So anyways, it was very powerful and a great introduction, ironically, for me to solo role-playing, even though it's a very touchy subject matter.
Challenging, I mean, challenging, it's not easy to talk through those topics to yourself necessarily, but having that framework to get something out and forcing yourself to commit to a...
Yeah, I think for me right now, I was just in a receptive state of mind to it because, I don't know, we all need an outlet to sort of let our mental wheels sort of spin, you know? So this was an opportunity to do that. So I really appreciated it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to checking this out myself.
That's Transformation, once again, by Absurdist Productions. Really interesting. A game from 2024. So recent.
Very cool. Okay. Shall we close the book?
I think we should. All right. So we haven't talked about our future.
Close the SP clamshell.
Close the physical zine RPG book. So this was our second playlist episode in a row. Sorry about that unfortunate break. You might have noticed me coughing a couple times during the course of this episode. Just the seasonal illness just got to me. But it gave us an opportunity to talk between myself and Daniel. And we don't have anything 100% solid just yet, but we had a fruitful discussion, and I think we're in the top in the mind to shake things up yet again.
We've both had some difficulties in scheduling, especially for more tabletop games, especially as we start leaning more into TTRPGs as well as board games, and the difficulty in getting not just together between us, but adding other friends together as well for particular games. We both have full-time jobs. We both have families. My daughter's now in school, so extracurriculars stacking up. So long story short, we think we just need a format that's going to be a little more flexible that allows us to talk about what's convenient at any particular time rather than enforcing the structure that we've had so far. So I think we'll probably announce the actual structure next episode when we reboot. We still will have a featured episode on Wildlands at some point. We just need a little more time to sort of pull some other people together for that.
That's right. So this new format, we'll tell you more about it next time, but it's not going to be so outlandishly different from what you've had before. It could actually be a little bit more of a return to form, something along the lines of things that we have done in the past. We've had longer talks about games. We've had shorter talks about games. We're still going to have this sort of very conversational tone about it. So same length of time. Yeah, we're just going to slightly rejig it.
Yeah, so if you have any feedback, both on the any format, past and present and future, please let us know. You can contact us at omnigamersclub@gmail.com or at our website, omnigamers.club.
That's right, and you can go check us out at YouTube if you haven't caught us there yet. Like and subscribe, add comments there. We are checking those out. And thank you for the comments that you've sent us out. Find folks there. And send us an email. We'd like to talk to you about the games that are on your list or any games that you're interested in sharing and talking about, especially along the lines of games that we've been talking about.
Yeah, tell us what retro games we should be checking out on our SPs.
That's right. The world of games is broad, and we're hoping to surf that ocean. Okay, so with that in mind, let's wrap it up for another episode.
Yeah, so thank you for listening. Thank you, Mark. And in the meantime, remember to have a balanced diet of gaming.
Goodbye.
Bye.